speak.
Let her speak.
Let her speak.
Let her speak. Let her speak.
What is she doing out there?
I'll cut off her mic.
No. Let her speak.
Let Her Speak is a show that will work its way through the alphabet from A to Z. We talk about music and culture and things we're obsessed with. We'll flirt with controversy and politics, always framed by a single letter. On this show, we're starting at the beginning, the letter A. Always at the front of the line, the letter A symbolizes the start of any list. It's likely the first letter any of us learn to draw. It is the first word. It is a word in a single letter. It can be a symbol of quality. Earn an A+, and it's the best of the best. And join the A-list, and you're Hollywood royalty. I'm joined today by my co-host, Tina.
Hey, how are you?
Good.
A.
How are you, A?
How's it going, A?
Good. We have a radio show now.
Yeah, I'm really excited.
Yeah. So this is the first episode. It's the letter A. I asked Tina to be my co-host, and we're here. We thought we should do a little introduction. Should I tell them who I am and who you are?
Yes.
I'm Jackie. You may know me from Revision Radio. I make an appearance on that every week. And Tina and I work together. And Tina is... Tell us who you are.
I work for Bose Brewery. I do... Basically, if you're looking to do events in the local or Ottawa area, you come and talk to me. You might see me hanging around the brewery, hanging around the bars in town, a.k.a. the Windsor.
The Windsor?
/ my friends' houses.
We can cover the Windsor when we get to the letter W.
Yes, we should save for that.
Yeah, cool. Okay, so when I thought of doing the show and we talked about doing the letter A, the first thing I thought of was Archie Comics.
Yes, that is a familiar favorite from when I was a kid.
Yeah. So this week I loaned you a copy of Archie Marries.
Yeah. I remember when this came out a few years ago, and there was a big uproar because the first one came out, and it was Archie Marries Veronica, and people were like, what?
Yeah, why would Archie marry Veronica?
He
That's ridiculous.
One.
Wow. Are you on Veronica's side or Betty's side?
I am on Team Veronica.
Okay.
For reasons that we can get into.
Okay.
But when I was a child, I was on Team Betty.
Okay.
Because
it's changed.
Yeah, it has. And I'll tell you why. So when I was a kid, you know how it was really important that your crayons like matched each other when you were a kid? So you're like, okay, like.
You mean in the box?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah,
but
okay.
You're like, okay, so blue and red are friends.
Okay.
You know. Yellow and orange are friends.
Yes.
Yeah.
I'm following. Okay.
Yeah. Okay. So Betty and Archie.
Yeah.
Betty's blonde. Archie's a redhead. So they should be together.
Right.
Veronica and Reggie both have black hair.
Yeah.
So they should get together.
Right. Okay.
So that was my like kid, like, okay, so if they match, they go together.
Kid which, logic.
Yeah. You know.
Okay.
Obviously it doesn't really make sense in the real world. but in my, I guess, adult life, thinking about this, Betty's so boring.
Oh, that hurts a little bit.
She's really boring. She's good at fixing cars, which is amazing.
She fixes cars and bakes pies
and
sews
cakes.
Things. I mean, she can do it all.
Yeah. But Veronica's got the bank.
Yeah, it's true.
They literally own everything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I mean, if you wanted to travel, you would want to do it with Veronica.
Yeah, for sure. So in Archie Marries Betty,
mm-hmm.
they basically kind of live in New York for a year, and Betty has a great job.
Yeah.
But then Archie's feelings get hurt at some dumb meeting with her terrible boss. This guy's an asshole.
Yeah. A for asshole.
A for asshole. There you go. amazing. And... Yeah, so she quits because, like, her husband's feelings got hurt.
Oh, Betty.
So ridiculous. So she's like, I'm going back to Riverdale.
And she's nothing if not loyal.
Yeah.
She's got that going for her. In a way, I mean, you know.
It is a great quality.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But it is interesting. It's an interesting series because, obviously, I'm sure a lot of adults read Archie Comics still. But mm-hmm. I hadn't read Archie Comics for, I'm going to say, I don't know, geez, like 17 years or something. Like,
right.
Probably way long, like 20 years.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I can't imagine having read one past the age of about 10 or 11. And it was kind of the same stuff I remembered, where it's like stuff happens very quickly. You know, it's like, okay, so Archie proposed to Veronica, and then like one page later, they're like, we're getting married. Yeah. I'm like, what? It doesn't take a week to plan a wedding.
It doesn't.
I know this.
Yeah. In comic book land, it can just happen in a heartbeat.
Yeah. No, it's true. They're like, oh, we'll just go to Pops and get married there. That's what he did with Betty, because they were low.
Oh, yeah, they got married at Pop Tate's.
Yeah, because they were low rent.
Oh. Okay, so as an adult, you change to Veronica because you think she's more exciting.
Yes. I think she could afford me a better life as her spouse.
So in this scenario, you are Archie.
Oh, yeah. Or, you know, Archette.
Okay. Yeah, I have always been a Betty. I don't think that that's like a big surprise if you know me. Like, I think part of it too is your childhood is like who you relate to or like wanted to. I didn't relate to Veronica because I didn't come from
mean.
Wealth and she was mean.
She's mean.
And,
she was so mean.
And like Betty being good at things, I just wanted to be good at all of the things that she was good at. Like, yeah. I wanted to be as good at boy things as I was at girl things, or what I perceived to be those boy and girl things.
Yeah, absolutely. And Veronica was good at what? Shopping.
Shopping.
Which
being
I didn't
stylish.
Care about as a kid. Right. Like, not at all.
Being stylish, yeah. But like, you're right. I mean, now that I'm thinking about it, and I actually don't even know if I've thought about Veronica's good qualities before, yeah. After being a long run Betty fan, Veronica can stand up for herself. Like, she doesn't take any shit.
No, she is an exciting woman, and her name rhymes with harmonica.
This is true. So the song I have to play related to this is by the fictional band, the Archies.
They were fictional?
Yeah. Well, the funny thing about the Archies, so there's the Archies of the comic, and then there's sort of all these different universes. You know, you were reading the like future universe where Archie gets married. There's different universes in comic books. So in one of the universes, there was a TV show, the Archies, that was a weird, super psychedelic, because I was into Archie comics, and then I actually was given a gift of the complete television cartoon series of the Archies, which is from the 60s.
Oh, wow.
And it's really, really weird.
Okay.
It's psychedelic, and there's long scenes with just music and them dancing in front of, like, psychedelic swirls. And
so somebody was on drugs when they wrote the episode.
It was the 60s. I think that's cartoons were. It was like that every episode. And
Weirder than Scooby-Doo.
It was definitely in the ballpark of Scooby-Doo.
Okay.
Like, it actually even looks kind of like Scooby-Doo.
Right. Okay. And, non-moving backgrounds.
Yeah. Non-moving backgrounds. Yeah. Like, the most moving backgrounds is the like psychedelic swirls.
Okay.
So the premise of that show is kind of, it's like, it's centered on the band, the Archies. So the Archies were the band in Archie comics, which was originally just, Archie, Reggie, and Jughead. And then later into the comic series, like the printed books, Betty and Veronica joined because, you know, so Betty played tambourine and sang backup, and Veronica played organ and sang backup.
Okay.
But then there was also like at the same time as all this was going on, like a band, like a studio band,
yeah.
recorded an album under the name The Archies and released it, and they had a number one hit.
Yeah.
So they actually had like a few albums. It was number one in 1969 when The Archies did it, and it was covered by Wilson Pickett in 1970 and went to number one again, which blows my mind. I can't imagine this happening in the modern world, but it went to number one for different reasons, obviously.
So were The Archies like the original Milli Vanilli?
Yeah, sure. I actually was thinking about, like, they were one of those bands. Like, it was just a bunch of studio musicians.
Yeah.
The songwriter of this song is actually from Montreal. So this song is in the Canadian Songwriters Hall of Fame, if you can believe that. And it got to be a number one hit because it was put on the back of the Sugar Crisp cereal boxes. So I don't know if you remember this. When I was a kid, we got National Geographic, and it had a record inside it, and it was just like a floppy piece of plastic, and it was whale songs, like whale music.
Okay.
So like, you can make a record as just like a floppy piece of plastic. So I guess they stuck one of these like on the back of Sugar Crisp cereal boxes, because Archie cartoons were like a, you know, a Saturday morning thing, and you could get this song Sugar Sugar, hence the Sugar Crisp connection.
Oh, that's amazing.
Right. And it went to number one. Anyway, so I'm gonna play that song now.
All right. Of loving you, I
kissed your girl, I knew how sweet a kiss could be.
I know how sweet a kiss can be.
Like the summer sunshine, pour your sweetness over me.
Pour your sweetness over me.
So we're back. We're back. Are you back?
Yeah. Hey.
Hi. So that was Sugar Sugar by the Archies. On the walk to the radio station tonight, we were having a conversation about things that we're watching on Netflix. And we joked that we could probably just have an entire radio show wherein we talk about things that we're watching on Netflix, which I think is a good idea for a show, actually.
Yeah, we should put a pin in that.
Yeah. Something I watched recently on Netflix was about Amy Winehouse. Amy Winehouse, whose name starts with the letter A. Are you a fan of Amy Winehouse?
Yes, but I would have to say that I don't know her whole discography.
Okay.
And I can't say that word.
It's not a very deep discography.
Discography. But she has really... Whoops. Sorry, banging mics around. But she had such a tragic life that I feel that really overshadows what, obviously, like what her talent was.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like her, like Back to Black, my mom actually really loved that album.
I feel like you get into music when you're like a teenager, then it sticks with you forever and you love it and love it. And I feel like the older you get, there's not albums that like really cling to you the same way.
Yeah, I agree with that.
There's some like science about that, I'm sure. Yeah. Your brain pathways or whatever. But that album, like I think it came out in 2007. So I was like 27, 28 years old. I feel like I have an attachment to that album like I do to albums that I heard when I was like 15, 16 years old. Because it was just, I heard a song and I was like, this is a good song. I've never heard anything like this before. I need to buy this album. I wasn't really buying a lot of albums at that time because like starting to download music and that sort of thing. And I went and bought it and I think I listened to it in my car like 100,000 times. Like I would just play it because I commuted to work. So I would just play it like over and over and over and over again.
Yeah. Cause there was no good like radio stations.
Yeah. And there was no bad songs in the album.
Like music. Yeah.
And you could sing along in the car. You could try to like do a horrible job of singing along.
Yeah. She was like kind of like like a modern 60s.
Yeah.
Like dancey ish, but ballads as well.
Yeah. And she definitely introduced a new sound. Yeah. That has been popular ever since, a style of singing that's been popular ever since.
Yeah.
So there's a documentary about her on Netflix. It won the Oscar and the BAFTA for Best Documentary Feature last year. Mm-hmm. I actually saw it in the theater. Documentary as a genre is not always the most uplifting topic. So this is not one where you leave the theater feeling like good necessarily.
Yeah. Like on the flip side, if it was a biopic...
Right.
It would probably be kind of like I have a lot of problems with biopics. Like
right.
I think they take someone like a performer's life and they really just highlight the kind of happy things that happened.
Right.
Yeah. Like Ray or the Johnny Cash biopics. Like I had huge problems with because I felt like they really didn't.
They gloss it over.
Yeah, exactly. And they kind of just like, well, some shitty things happened over here. But
yeah.
Listen to this amazing song.
Yeah. This was good. I mean, it introduced, if you knew Amy Winehouse, like I feel like as fans, we didn't get that much time to really get to know Amy Winehouse. We just sort of knew that album. We loved it. And then it just felt like in a heartbeat, she was gone.
Yeah.
So it was good because it introduced you to a young Amy Winehouse. There was tons of video footage of like her coming up and like her early work and how her songwriting process was. And then it took a weird turn, and it took some criticism for this, for it kind of just went deep into the issues with men in her life. So like the boyfriend, crappy drug addict boyfriend, this, you know, weird father that was like exploiting her. And yeah. And then there's this whole part, like she was addicted to drugs, and then she like took off to the islands to try to get clean, and she was fine. She was just like living in the islands, I don't know, somewhere, Turks and Caicos or something, like getting clean, and was clean and was there. And then her father shows up with like a camera crew to interview her, and she's like, why are you here? I don't even want to be famous anymore, kind of thing. That's like, he just brought people there because he had access to her. It was like this weird, anyway, so it got kind of dark.
Gross.
Yeah, like her dad is pretty creepy, I feel like, and it portrayed him in a way that came across really creepy. So he was involved in the documentary early on and then pulled out.
Because he was like, oh, you're going to show me doing creepy things.
Yeah, because they wouldn't basically gloss over that whole sort of part of her life.
Right. Okay.
Yeah, it was, but it's worth a watch. So it's on Netflix.
Yeah.
It's called Amy. It's a good watch. It's definitely worth checking out, but not the brightest, happiest story, obviously, because it ends tragically.
No, and I find a lot of documentaries about musicians. I would like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Tortured artists.
Oh, absolutely. I remember when Amy Winehouse was still alive, I read a news article, and it's like, this is embarrassing, but it was Daily Mail, which is a terrible, like, tabloidy newspaper from the UK. Don't read it.
Yeah. True.
I think I was like dicking around at work. and I was like, oh, let's read this. And there was a really cute article how fans knew where she lived in. Oh, geez, it's this part of London.
I don't have that in my notes, but yeah, it isn't.
Yeah. Okay, it's a trendy part of London.
They talk about it a lot in the documentaries. Yeah. It's not coming to me. Yeah.
It's a trendy part of London.
Yeah.
So it's this neighborhood that's very, you know, pretty close-knit. Mm-hmm. And so fans knew where she lived, but so they would just ring her buzzer up to her flat, and sometimes she would just, like, chat with them and, like, sing with them if she felt like it.
Yeah, I think she was just like a normal person who just couldn't handle the like crazy amount of fame she just got all at once. You know, she just wanted to write songs and sing jazz, and then made an album that was a game changer to pop music, and it just became like, she was like, I didn't actually mean to do this.
Yeah. And didn't have a support system to actually, you know, contrast it with another person who we might chat about, Adele.
Yes.
Yes. Yes. Who seems to have, you know, her stuff together.
Definitely has her stuff together. And in the same kind of singing genre, I actually think they maybe have gone to school together, singing school together, but that's.
Or maybe went to the same school different years.
Yeah, I think they had a different, like, similar singing instructor at different times in their life.
But I feel like their lives kind of paralleled in that, you know, like they both got huge, you know, with one specific album.
Yeah.
And then, you know. Adele took time off because she was like, I'm going to have a kid. And
Yeah. So we're going to play a little song by Amy Winehouse because it's great. So this is Me and Mr. Jones from the album Back to Black. Amy Winehouse.
Play. motherfuckery are you? Die from some of your my best black Joe. But I could swear that we would throw up. I still wonder about the things you do. Mr. Destiny, 9 and 14. Nobody's standing in between.
We're back.
So I have been informed that Amy Winehouse lived in Camden Town.
Camden Town.
Yes, Camden Town.
We have a listener.
Yep, one listener.
Look at us having a listener.
I know, it's amazing. Information. Crowdsourcing. Crowdsourcing.
Hive mind. I've just noticed people doing that on Facebook recently. They's like, they don't even look up at anything. They just post on Facebook, hey, like, where is the best place to go eat in Camden Town? And then, like, hashtag hive mind, and they just let people answer for them.
Oh, yeah. I think that is actually a very good strategy for small towns as well. Because we all are connected to somebody who is a super connected local.
Yeah.
And they know literally everything. Like, I could probably name at least three, generally women, at least three women at work that fill this role for me.
Yes.
Yeah. Like, I need to know this really specific local thing. Oh, I'll ask her. She knows it all.
Yeah, because on that topic, we're both new in town. We're not locals.
No.
We are now, but we're not from here originally. So it's important to have people that you say, where do I go and get my eyebrows done or something?
Oh, absolutely. Like, where of the 17 places in town can I get a haircut?
Where can I get it put in?
Where can I get my dog bathed? There are two places.
So we have a segment now called Tina's Taboo. I think maybe in the future I'll have a Tina's Taboo.
I was going to say, I really would appreciate
intro
some
music?
Intro pizzazz.
Okay, next episode I'll have some intro pizzazz for Tina's Taboo.
Thanks.
This is a segment of the show where Tina brings a word to discuss that may be taboo, controversial. I don't know what the word is in advance, and then we discuss it.
Perfect. Okay. So I may have cheated, and this might not really be a taboo. I feel I have to put an asterisk here, but I Jackie asked me to do this radio show, and she said if the topic is the letter A, and I was like, this is the best word I know that is an A word.
Okay.
And it is anti-disestablishmentarianism.
That's a big one.
It is a political position that developed in 19th century Britain in opposition to the Liberal Political Party proposals for the disestablishment of the Church of England, meaning the removal of the Anglican Church's status as the state church of England, Ireland, and Wales.
You know, I did not know this.
No.
I think if I had written a test without studying and I had to write the definition of this word, I would not even have come close.
It is, no. You'd be like anti-dis.
Okay. I would have been like, it's something to do with punk and like not liking political leaders. Like, I feel like I would have had the vibe, but I would have never like nailed it down to like that.
It's specifically a 19th century political position about the church.
Well, I mean, there's maybe some taboo in there because people who believe that the church should have maintained its position might feel that this word
has
some controversy attached.
The Anglican Church is the state church of England.
Mm-hmm. A for Anglican?
Yeah, right. There you go. A for Anglican. The establishment was maintained in England, but Ireland and Wales both eventually were disestablished. So Church of Ireland is not Anglican, and the Church of Wales is not either.
You learn something new every day.
I know.
I liked that. I like that word. I like how many letters it is.
It is one of the longest non-scientific words in the English language.
I like that. I feel like I have to take a breath in the middle, like anti-disestablishmentarianism.
Yeah,
you know, like I can't even get the whole word out in one go.
It is a good one. So for modern usage,
okay,
it can refer to any opposition to those who oppose the establishment.
It's an opposition to people who oppose the establishment.
Yes.
Okay.
Because it's anti-disestablishment.
Oh, okay. Yes.
Yeah, so
yes.
You're like, oh, God.
That's the anti and the dis, like taking it apart into the letters.
Yeah. So the establishment means either the government or society in general.
Ugh.
Yeah. Try using it in an email tomorrow.
So I feel like if I was going to talk about like current politics, disestablishment, I feel like Trump might be an example of someone who's against the establishment. because he's like a weird independent politician. And if you're against him, you might be an anti-disestablishmentarianism. Is that a bad example? Oh no, maybe Bernie Sanders is a better example. Bernie Sanders is a better example of someone who's against the establishment. Because he is against like taking corporate money and the established rule of politics.
Yeah, break it down.
And then if I was against Bernie Sanders, so if I was a Trump supporter, I might be anti-disestablishmentarianism.
Yeah, I think it works a bit better that way.
Okay.
I maybe should have called my English professor father in on this one, but he's traveling, so.
Next time, we can check in for the letter B.
Yeah, right? Fun fact.
Yes.
In an Ice-T song, First Impression, from the album OG Original Gangster, the narrator notes that T is the epitome of anti-disestablishmentarianism. It's in a rap skit.
Okay.
So it's like one of those songs that's at the end of real song, which I have mixed feelings about because rap skit, but like whatever happened to rap skits? Kanye had so many.
I don't know. There should be, rap skits should come back.
But I guess we don't listen to CDs that way anymore either.
You know, and hidden songs. I've noticed I've been listening to albums recently on Apple Music. A for Apple Music.
Yes, because they break out every track.
Yeah, so if you know hidden songs in the 90s, they would bury one like 10 minutes after the last song that was listed. And then another. So you left your CD player going, you'd be scared because it would startle you because the song would play. It doesn't happen anymore. It just skips to that song.
Yeah.
There's no break.
No. So it is a rap skit, but it's only about 45 seconds long.
Okay.
And it's this woman who has this British accent and she's basically talking about Ice-T, and you can find it on YouTube, which is where I found it, and I highly recommend it.
If we were clever, we would have had this song queued up and ready to go. Next time. We'll do it.
Yeah.
We'll have that part down in our...
It's a bit naughty, so I'm not sure for, you know.
I have a song that we could switch to that is also a bit naughty. It's not this song, but it is a rap song, and it is a little bit naughty.
Let's do this.
I have Anaconda by Nicki Minaj. I think I'm just going to play it. It has explicit lyrics warning on it. So I'll give the listeners that warning. We'll play it and then we can discuss Anaconda after this.
Amazing.
My Anaconda don't, my Anaconda don't, my Anaconda don't want none unless you got buns, hun.
Boy, toy named Troy used to live in Detroit. Big soap, selling money, he was getting some coins. Was in shootouts with the law, but he lived in a palace. Bought me Alexander McQueen.
My anaconda don't want none unless you got buns, hun. Don't, my
ton.
Butt.
Yeah, he love this fat ass. Yeah, this one is for my bitches with a fat ass in the fucking club. I said, with my fat ass pig bitches in the club. Fuck the skinny bitches. Fuck the skinny bitches in the club. I wanna see all the big fat ass bitches in the motherfucking club. Fuck you if you skinny bitches. What? Yeah. I got a big fat ass. Come on.
So that was Anaconda by Nicki Minaj.
Jackie, question for you.
Yes.
Did you first hear the song or see the video?
Oh, I saw the video first for sure.
How did you like see the buzz and look it up specifically? Or, like nobody watches, you know, like video shows anymore, right?
So. I probably saw it. Okay. I read some blogs and I probably saw it written about in a blog first. I was going to say I probably saw it shared on Facebook first. It's possible that I saw it on Facebook, but I think it's more possible that the day it was released, I read about it on a blog who said this crazy video came out. You got to go see this video.
Okay. Yeah.
I think that's more likely. But I definitely saw the video and heard the song at the same time. And my mind, like many minds, were blown.
Yes.
So if you haven't seen the video, it features a lot of booty.
Yeah, it's bodacious.
It's bodacious. We could talk about this in the episode for the letter B. But yeah. So Nicki Minaj is a rapper. This is from her third album, The Pink Print. It took a lot of criticism. She takes a lot of criticism all the time.
Yeah, she does a lot for her appearance.
Yes. She is a curvy woman and she shows off her curves a lot in this video. She shakes every part of her body. She took a lot of criticism because I think people felt like people like to tell women what to do and how to act.
Oh,
yeah. I don't mean to be too feminist, but that's just my opinion.
That's a thing.
Yeah. So yeah. She kind of moves back and forth between doing like kind of hard hip hop music and then music, pop music for the clubs that become big number one hits. So I feel like I'm a Nicki Minaj fan. I'll just put that out there. If you don't listen to full albums of her work and you only know her pop songs, you might think she's just like a, you know, a pop artist. She's like a Katy Perry or whatever. And then a song like this comes out that's just kind of like a crazy hip hop song where she like goes in and out of different characters and does different kind of things. And you're like, what is going on? Why is this person so offensive?
Yeah, like the first time I ever heard her, she was on the Kanye track Monster.
Yeah.
And I was like, who is rapping? This is amazing.
Yeah, because she goes into like a crazy alter ego sometimes.
Absolutely, yeah. And then, you know, there was a Super Bass came out and that was a huge hit.
Yeah.
And Starships. Yeah. Yeah. Like that was a huge club hit.
Huge club hit. Yeah.
And then so she's doing Anaconda and she's, you know, doing this kind of like hard rap where she's going back to her roots of hard rap.
Yeah.
And she's doing that more lately. She's kind of stripping down her persona as well.
Yeah.
Like she's not wearing as many wigs.
Yeah.
Or as many, I don't know, I'm going to say super vibrant outfits.
Yeah. She wears some pretty wild stuff.
Yeah. They're amazing. But she's kind of toning that down a little bit more now.
Yeah.
She's going back to doing the hard rap and, you know, she's... In this video, she's actually with her label mate, Drake.
Yeah.
They're
on Cash Money Records.
Yep, together. And in this video, he's just kind of like...
He's a prop.
Yeah, he's a dude on a chair, and it's amazing.
Yeah.
He's like, oh, I guess that's a dude.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of criticism because people are made uncomfortable by the overt sexuality. But then if you look at it sort of from the flip side, it's like, so the song she samples in this is Sir Mix-a-Lot's Baby Got Back. That's the like, my anaconda don't part that you hear. Mm-hmm. And then, so she samples that, which is a song like objectifying women. And then she purposely samples that in a song where she obviously said it about objectifying herself, yeah, and having control over that. And I think that that is like something, that is like an action that makes people feel like, what is happening? I feel uncomfortable with this. A lot of people do. Other people find it exciting and interesting and are attracted to it, and it generates a ton of attention.
Yeah.
But I think it's, I feel like it got a lot of criticism because people were just like, what? This is, I don't know how to handle this kind of like powerful imagery.
Yeah, absolutely. And I do feel that she kind of restarted the butts.
Did butts ever really go out of fashion?
I don't think they did really, but
my butts are huge kinda, right now.
Yeah, like it's, you know, it's a
asses, you might say, are huge right now to
asses,
stay with the theme, yes, of the hey, show.
Asses are huge. Yeah, but I think she restarted that. And yeah, there's been, you know, there's been that kind of controversy where Miley Cyrus was like, oh, she's mm-hmm. like overtaking or saying that she's, you know, not saying that she's doing it, but she is doing it. She's doing like all this like twerking.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's been a huge dance move within, especially the African-American community, dance community. Like yeah, that's been there for years.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then
Miley Cyrus did not invent it.
No, not at all. And so then Nicki Minaj comes along and you're like, oh, she is laying it down.
Yeah. She knows how to twerk.
Yeah. Amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. It's quite a thing. It did go to number one in a lot of countries. It was a huge hit. I would say I really actually like the Pink Print album. I listened to it a lot last year. It was like a thing I listened to when I was working out a lot. It has some amazing tracks like deep in the album. It's like a 22 track album.
Oh, wow.
It's worth a listen. And it definitely goes in and out of pop. And she sings, and there's some really like deep introspective stuff about like her life up to this point, which she hasn't really done before. And also some good party tunes.
Cool. I read that Sir Mix-a-Lot actually really praised Nicki Minaj for the sample. He really loved the track.
Yeah, I think she's definitely like a respected artist among artists because she pushes envelopes and does different things and still manages to be popular and mainstream.
Yeah.
Which is not necessarily the easiest thing in the modern age.
Oh, no. Yeah, and she faces tons of criticism for her look.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ugh.
Society, right?
Society, am I right?
Right.
So are we going to talk about Ben Affleck next?
We should.
I think I'm going to play this song ahead of talking about Ben Affleck. So this is a song from the movie Argo. Argo with spelled with an A, A-R-G-O. Directed by director Ben Affleck. This is a song by Booker T and the MGs from that movie that I just like, so I want to play it, even though it doesn't start with an A, but Argo and Ben Affleck does.
Hey, there's two A's in there. It's yeah. Fine.
Okay, so here we go. Thank you. So that was Hip Hug Her by Booker T and the MGs from the movie Argo, directed by Ben Affleck.
Did you see that movie?
I did see that movie. Argo, fuck yourself. Did you see it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. No, it's good. I enjoyed it.
Yeah.
And then, as I do for every film I see, I immediately, after seeing it, we get in the car or wherever we're leaving the film, and I go on IMDb and I proceed to read every single trivia item I can about it.
Ed and I do that too. And we call that movie facts. In fact, after the movie, we then say to each other when we get in the car, movie facts. And then we read them all out loud.
Or with a T.
I think in my brain, I've never written it down. It's F-A-C-T-S.
Okay.
But we read all the trivia and we read the goofs and then we talk about them.
Yeah. No, I love it.
So we're nerds. Good. This is established.
No, of course. Yeah. Hello. Why are we talking about this on the radio?
Exactly.
So you find this interesting. Yes. No, I that's what I do. And I looked it up and I was like, oh, a lot of this stuff didn't happen in real life. And or it's like, you know, it's a movie. It's the same thing the problem I have with biopics, where they're smushing too much story into the things and trying to make them more exciting, which I get because I understand dramatic tension. And it is a really interesting story. And I'm glad it came to a movie. Mm-hmm. Like, it was pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
I think my favorite part of the movie, this sounds so silly, was the dramatic roundtable reading of their fake script.
Yes.
Where they all were dressed up as these crazy things. I was like, this is so good.
His name's Alan Arkin, right? Is that his name? The guy in that movie?
One of the guys.
Yeah. I just wanted to say it because it started with an A and another letter.
There you go.
He was great in that movie, though. I think at the end, didn't they have to put a disclaimer on it and say, like, the Canadians had more to do with this than we pretended they did?
That happened.
What happened with that, and this is, I didn't pre-prepare this segment really, but I think what happened is they took that movie to TIFF and they premiered it at TIFF, as all good Oscar bait pictures are premiered.
Yeah, but it's in Toronto where people know their bloody movie history.
Exactly. Torontonians were like, what the F?
Yeah.
This isn't right. Yeah. I looked it up on the internet and there was way more Canadian involvement. So they added that as a sort of afterthought for the cinema audiences.
Yeah, absolutely. Like the character that Affleck is playing, which I think was based on a Canadian.
Yeah.
I believe.
I don't think they really explain that in the movie.
No, they're just like, oh, here's this dude from the CIA. You're Ben Affleck. Here we go.
It's how all American military related movies are made, or historical. It feels like they just this happened in history and they just leave out all the other people.
Yeah. Well, there's a really good example of this where there's a film about a U.S. submarine capturing an Enigma machine, mm-hmm. which is a World War II code-breaking device, which in reality was by the British. That the British did it. Yeah, not the Americans.
But it's such a good story, Tina.
No,
they just wanted to be theirs.
We didn't want
to
do the floofy accents. It's too hard.
The movie Argo won Best Picture, but Ben Affleck did not win Best Director.
That kind of happened at this last Oscars. Mm-hmm. It was a big spread of what won and what didn't win.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, Leo, The Revenant.
Yes.
The Irish chick for that Irish movie that I did not see.
Yeah.
And like the Best Picture, which I'm blanking on, but it was, you know, it wasn't the Best
Director. Oh, it was that one about,
I believe.
It was.
Any callers want to call in or correct me?
Anyways.
Yeah.
I think it has to do with, because they're nominating more movies for Best Picture now. Like, it used to be, I think they just nominated 4 or 5 or something, and now they're doing 10.
And they were
10.
All like, okay, it got nominated for Best Picture, so
it's
Best Actors.
Obviously Best Director.
Best Directors.
Yeah.
And Producer.
Yeah.
Blah, blah, blah.
I think Ben Affleck suffers. This is my opinion about the Oscars, and I have probably shared this opinion before, and I will share it until I'm blind. The Oscars are just a popularity contest. It's like in high school where you are running for council president. Yes, you can't be a total moron and you have to have some skill because you have to put together a campaign. But ultimately what it comes down to is who has more friends in the room. And so like the Oscars, like, it has to be a good movie because your friends in the room care about good movies. But once you're at the level of being nominated, the race between nomination and winning is like a popularity contest among friends.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, why does Meryl Streep have 17 Oscar nominations? I'm not saying she's not a great actress,
because
she is. She's a very good actress. But the reason she's cast in all these movies that are at Oscar caliber is because she's friends with all these other people, you know, which is, that's the movie business, kid.
So coming back to my point, I think Ben Affleck is not that popular. Like, I think people like the idea of him and the idea of his movies, but right. him as a person,
sure,
maybe not that popular for some reason. So he can't, like, he can't bring it home.
Yeah, I could see that. But he's going through some weird personal life stuff right yeah. now, too.
Yeah.
I want to bring up giant Phoenix back tattoo.
Yeah, this got a lot of press recently.
Yeah, it really did.
His entire back covered in a tattoo.
Jennifer Lopez, Jenny from the Block, she called it awful.
I read Jennifer Garner, who he's splitting up with, his ex-wife, said in a quote in an article, she said, "You know what we would say in my hometown about that? Bless his heart."
That is the most Southern dismissive,
like, cutting thing you cuts, can
say.
Cuts to the yeah. bone, right? Like, yeah. I was like, that is, like, classy and prim and snarky, and it's so many things. Bless his heart. I think I actually want to take on bless his heart as, like, a saying that I use.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. Someone comes to you with something shitty and you're like, oh, bless your heart.
Oh, bless your heart.
Bless yeah. your heart. You tried. You tried. Yeah. Yeah, but no. So he says it's fake.
I don't know, though. Is it?
He says it's for a film called Live by Night.
Okay, so I read that, but
which
that movie
takes place in, like, the 20s.
Yeah, and apparently there's, like, no reason why that tattoo would be in the movie. So it stands to be seen.
We'll see.
We'll see. It may be fake. We're not sure yet.
So yeah, so Affleck confirmed the massive Phoenix taking flight tat was fake for a movie, and he added, "I actually do have a number of tattoos, but I try to have them in places where you don't have to do a lot of cover up."
On his butt?
Like, on his butt.
On his ass, I should say.
Oh, sorry.
The topic of this episode is the letter A.
Affleck's ass.
Yeah, I guess, I don't know.
I don't know. I'm skeptical.
I have mixed feelings, Ben Affleck. I'm not a huge Ben Affleck fan. I actually feel, even in Argo, that movie would have been better if he'd cast Casey Affleck, his brother, as the part that he played. I think he's a good director, and I've liked the Ben Affleck movies. They would be better if Ben Affleck wasn't in them.
Yeah, not to harp on how he looks, but have you noticed he's a mouth breather?
I can't say I have, but now I will never be able to not notice that.
No, you're going to see him next time you see him.
When we meet in person, lunch, you know. In the future. Yes.
You know, but in a film or yeah. in a photo, and you'll be like, oh, yeah. He,
yeah.
Yeah, mouth breather.
I won't be able to unsee it.
No, sorry. Sorry for that visual.
That's okay. We should move into, we have about 10 minutes left.
Okay, great.
We have one more segment that's going to be a regular segment. So I started being on the radio here in Van Cleek Hill on my husband's radio show. I have an ongoing segment there. So in reciprocity, is that a thing? Reciprocal for his, my placement on his show. I have a segment for him on this show, and it's Word of the Week with Eddie Earwig.
That's adorable.
Yeah. You like it?
Yeah.
So he pre-records. It's the Word of the Week. I listened to it today because I kind of wanted to get a sense of what it would be like, but I kind of think I want to do it again, like how yours was, where I don't know what it is. I'm going to try to not listen to it in the future so I can be surprised.
And then we can discuss.
Yes, and then we can discuss. So we'll just take a moment here and play Eddie Earwig's Word of the Week.
Hi, this is Eddie Earwig, Jackie's handsome husband, and I have the Word of the Day. The Word of the Day is Alamo. In 1836, Mexican troops launched an attack on the Alamo Mission near modern-day San Antonio, Texas, and all the Texans were killed. They made a movie in 1960 starring John Wayne, then another movie in 2004 starring Dennis Quaid and Billy Bob Thornton called The Alamo. The 2004 version has 29% on Rotten Tomatoes. The Alamo is probably most famous for the place the fortune teller tells Pee-wee Herman that his bike is in the movie Pee-wee's Big Adventure. She tells him it's in the basement of the Alamo, and then we discover that the Alamo has no basement. The Alamo.
So I guess it was called Word of the Day.
Yeah,
oops.
Whatever.
When I typed the name of the file, I got that wrong. So Alamo.
Remember the Alamo.
Yeah. Have you ever been to Texas?
No. Well, Texas airport for 4 hours. That doesn't count.
Sorry. No, that doesn't count.
No. But I have a bunch of relatives who are kind of south. It's like Kentucky.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they, I don't know. Remember the Alamo is a big Texas thing.
Yeah. Texans are into their history.
Remembrance
or
stuff.
Their versions of history that they like to remember.
Yeah.
As a sidebar to that, and coming back to, could we just have a show about Netflix? Have you watched the new Pee-wee Herman movie on Netflix.
I have not, but
I think it's PB Takes a Vacation. Or
does he do the dance?
No,
at the bar. Why not?
Because
did
you know,
he do another dance?
It's a new movie. He does new things.
Can he do a new dance?
He goes on a pretty serious adventure. It's funny because I was watching it and I was like, this is kind of weird. And then at the end, it ended and I was like, I realized it was in the Netflix kids section. I was like, oh yeah, Pee-wee Herman is a child's entertainer. I forgot.
I loved that show when I was a kid. Yes. And I think my parents thought I was insane.
It's a crazy show. And when you watch it now, I think when I watched a couple of episodes of Pee-wee's Playhouse now, I realized why people of our generation are obsessed with things from the 1950s. I actually think he's directly responsible for why all women... or why women are obsessed with looking like rockabilly, like vintage, like 1950s pinup, like that whole trend.
I totally agree.
Because when you watch that show, all he has on it is like aging stars from the 50s.
Yeah, no, that's such a great observation. And his kind of like, it's because he's so he's asexual.
Yeah.
Another A word.
Yes.
But cherry or something? Cherry berry? No.
Yeah, his cherry.
Like the chair is a woman. There's this like sexy lady who has a big red wig.
Mm-hmm.
I can't remember her name.
But she's
either.
Like really 50s, right? She's got
like
a beehive.
Yeah. But she's
and...
like super, she looks amazing.
Yeah.
Like she's like the ultimate lady when you're a kid.
His whole house, it's like checkerboard floors, 1950s kitsch. Like his whole style, like the Sputnik, like the kidney shaped tables, like that whole thing is like the whole Pelly house is like that.
But I remember watching the first film as a kid and being really freaked out by it, specifically by the giant bathtub scene with the kid with the boats.
Oh yeah. Okay.
Like that's the kid that stole his bike. So there's... he's having to fight in a giant bathtub.
Yeah, there's definitely some weird, it's weird. And I think as a child, like for children's entertainment, I like that it's weird because I think when I was a kid, I liked that it was so different and it made
absolutely.
Me think different things. And I feel like a lot of kids' entertainment is pretty samey. So in that sense, I'm kind of glad that he's back and doing something different.
Someone's doing something zany.
Yeah. Zany. So earlier in the show, we got 5 minutes left. Earlier in the show, we briefly said the name Adele. So I do have an Adele song. Maybe we should just wrap it up and then play an Adele song as on our way out.
Yeah.
Adele has a big voice.
Yes.
She's a monster superstar.
Yeah, she's amazing. Did you see her in the... Oh, geez. He's this like British guy with a show, but he sometimes...
Graham I'm Norton? Worst,
no, different guy.
The other guy?
The other guy.
Yeah.
The other British man with a show.
Yeah, okay.
But he has this segment where he has singer doing karaoke in cars with singers.
Oh, yeah. Singing in cars with... James Corden.
James Corden. There we go. Thanks.
Hilarious. I love all of them.
I watched that segment with Adele and I was like, I want to be her friend.
I know.
So bad.
Yeah, she really seems down to earth and she can just laugh at herself and like you could go for a pint with her and it would
amazing.
Be fun.
Yeah, she was just describing her familial Christmas routine. She's like, well, I was drunk for 3 days because Christmas. And I was like, oh my God, I love you.
Yeah. I think she it's amazing because I feel like a lot of stars that have voices like that, like if I think of Whitney Houston or something, they and their management and the record companies put them on the pedestal as if they were like these like incredible
cultivate
stars.
Cultivate a mystery.
Yeah. Adele, total other approach.
Yeah. It's she's like, I made muffins. Want one?
Yeah. She's an every girl. She's down the street. She's just a normal chick you could hang out with, but she also sings and writes these crazy, incredible, giant ballads.
Agreed.
So,
another A word.
Now that I said, she writes these songs, I actually chose a cover because I wanted to, because Adele has huge hits. I didn't want to pick a huge hit.
Yeah, I know. That's fair.
So I picked a song that I actually like by both artists. It was done by The Cure. And this is her version of Love Song from her album 21, which was a deeper track on the album 21 that has her big hits on it. And that's it. And this is Let Her Speak. And I'm Jackie.
And I'm Tina.
And next week we'll do the letter B.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Whenever I'm alone. Whenever